One of my favorite lines in the book is that we all have scars. Some of them you can see, or some of them might be in your head.
Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the mother of an adult with a critical congenital heart defect. My child is 27 years old, my inspiration, and the reason I am the host of your program. Today's show is from educator to heart mom to author, and our guest is Katie Green. We'll start today's program by learning a bit about Katie and her immediate family in segment one. In the second segment, we'll talk about Katie's book, and in the final segment, we'll gain some advice from Katie about writing and where we can find her book. Katie Green is married to husband Scott, and together they have three children, Henry, Lyle, and Charlotte. Charlotte was born with Scimitar syndrome, which consists of several congenital heart defects. In addition to the syndrome, she was also diagnosed with multiple other complex medical conditions and underwent six surgeries before she was 18 months old. Charlotte is yet to face heart surgery, which she will need at some time in the future. Concerned that Charlotte will be old enough to remember her heart surgery, Katie wanted to help prepare her daughter for this day and build her confidence and her resilience. A former educator, she wrote her first children's book, My Scars, My Brave Adventure, to help celebrate difference and surgical scars. Katie and her family live in Chicago, where they love to spend time at parks and museums as a family. Welcome to Heart with Anna, Katie.
Hi, Anna. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you, even though both of us are braving the cold this morning as we record the program. It's funny because it's much warmer in Texas, and I'm even more bundled up than Katie is. I have my little vest and my turtleneck sweater.
Yeah, a balmy 19 degrees in Chicago this morning. Oh, okay. So, yeah.
And it's 40 here in Texas, so I'm frozen. But luckily, she has her cup of coffee. I have my cup of tea, and we are ready to get to know each other this morning. So start by telling me about Charlotte, Katie, and when you discovered that she had Scimitar syndrome.
Yeah, and you did such a lovely intro. I think the listener probably already knows a little bit about her story, but Charlotte's 4 years old now. She is such a typical four-year-old girl. She likes to wear tutus, and she does tennis and dance class and swimming. But she had a really interesting start to her life. She was born at 32 weeks premature. At a typical pregnancy up until 32 weeks, they did an extra ultrasound scan and found a bunch of abnormalities, but they just weren't exactly sure. So that was a Thursday morning. Charlotte was born Friday night the next day.
Oh my gosh.
It was a very fast and furious experience. She immediately went to the NICU, where she spent 11 weeks. As you mentioned, she underwent six surgeries in her first 18 months. And we didn't know that she had a heart anomaly until after she was born. She got whisked away to the NICU, and she needed some fluid drained from her stomach right away, from her belly, to get her stable. Anyone who's had a baby in the NICU knows how chaotic that time period is. And the amazing doctors and nurses are in and out, and there's tubes and beeping. They found an abnormality in her heart, but they weren't sure what it was yet. And they didn't know if she was safe to undergo anesthesia. So they ended up doing that first procedure bedside. And I think looking back on it, it was so crazy. I don't think my husband and I even really understood what was happening in that moment. But it wasn't until the dust settled there and they got her stable and were able to establish that she could go under anesthesia and gave her a cardiac MRI where they discovered that she had Scimitar syndrome.
Oh, my goodness. So tell me exactly what Scimitar syndrome is.
Yeah, so it's a rare congenital heart defect. In Charlotte's case, she has an underdeveloped right lung, and then it is PAPVR, which is partial anomalous pulmonary venous return. So what that means is Charlotte has a pulmonary vein that carries blood to the right side of her heart instead of the left.
Oh, that sounds scary.
So it can be. Sometimes babies are born with Scimitar syndrome and they're sick right away. They turn blue, they have a hard time breathing, or people are born with it and they're asymptomatic. And interesting enough, Charlotte falls into that asymptomatic category. I'm not sure that they actually would have found her Scimitar syndrome unless she had all these other medical complexities and was in the NICU being scanned from head to toe, every body part. Often people walk around with it, with PAPVR until adulthood, and it gets diagnosed later. Yeah.
Wow. So does she also have a VSD or an ASD? No. She has no holes in her heart.
No.
So even though this is not going back to the place it's supposed to, her heart's able to compensate. How is her heart able to compensate for this difference?
So isn't that amazing?
It is. The human body is amazing.
I think about that all the time too. And funny enough, because she's had so many other complexities and the heart surgery we've been able to push because it has been asymptomatic, I'm not sure that I fully understand how. But she gets enough oxygen and the blood flows. It's explained to me that it's just incredibly inefficient. Since the heart is a muscle, it works and can get bigger like any muscle. So that right side of the heart could get too big and cause problems later in life too.
That's definitely something you don't want to see happen because, oh, there can be so many complex issues after that. So it's good that they're keeping an eye on it. But the good thing is that when you're 1, 2, 3, even 4 years old, you're not usually a gymnast or somebody who's stressing their heart too much. Little kids play, but they're self-limiting. It's not until they get much older when they're very competitive and they push their bodies past what their bodies tell them to do. So as long as she limits herself naturally, she's probably doing fine and not doing any damage to her heart.
Yeah. And I think that's what the doctors have told us. And that's so interesting that you bring that up because I think of that a lot. I'm a runner. I like to run. My husband and I both played sports growing up. Her brothers are very into sports. So I think about that a lot in terms of right now she has no limitations because, as you said, she self-regulates. But it'll be really interesting to see both post-surgery and before her surgery what she'll be able to do.
Have they given you any idea when they're going to need to do that surgery?
So it's funny. They are looking for this perfect time to intervene. They originally told us it might be when she was 2 or 3, and then we got to 2 or 3. And as I'm sure many of your listeners know and understand, they don't like to work and operate on teeny tiny hearts. So they want her to get bigger. And since she is asymptomatic, we have that luxury. Our cardiologist presents her to the surgical board annually, and that's coming up in the spring. So I think it could be any time. I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, let's wait another year, or if they were like, okay, it's go time, because I think we're kind of approaching that sweet spot. She'll be 5 in April, so 5, 6, I think, is possibly what they'll say. And it's interesting. I think because we have had the luxury of time, which so many heart conditions don't, more research is coming out and they're changing. It's been really fascinating, even in just her 4 years. The head of surgery at our children's hospital has switched over, and they really do. It's a real-time collaborative decision that's being made, which, again, I realize we're fortunate to have that luxury. But I ask them all the time, are you sure she's going to have it?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And every time they're like, yes, we do. Eventually it will become problematic.
And you want to catch it before it's too problematic because you don't want her to have the surgery when she's really sick because that puts her at so much more risk. So tell me about Lyle and Henry. Are they heart healthy or do they have some medical issues too?
They are heart healthy and 100% healthy in every other way. Yes, right. So that was
voice.
Just our annual pediatrician check. So as our third child, we were like, my joke in good taste or not is always leave it to the girl to make the dramatic entrance.
Yep. So they're healthy and they're only a couple years older than her each, right? You have stair-step children. So tell us how old the kids are.
Yeah. So Henry, his birthday was on Monday. So he just turned 9.
Happy birthday, Henry.
Thank you. And Lyle is 6, but he will turn 7 in a couple of weeks. So for our purposes, we'll say that they're 9, 7, and Charlotte is 4, will be 5 in April.
So they're old enough to know that baby sister has some issues. How have they handled having a baby sister who has some conditions?
I think that's such an important question. I love that you asked this because it cannot be easy to be the sibling of a sibling with medical complexities. I think when she was born, and that's when she underwent the bulk of her initial surgeries, they were 2 and 4. And so they were really young. Certainly Lyle, who was 2.
Right.
But this is another way that kids are so amazing. They don't know any different. And I love that they don't treat her any different. They behave around her the way any older brothers would around their sister. But at the same time, you do notice it creep in. You will go for a regular pediatrician appointment and they'll ask, does she have to spend the night? Most people would not ask if their sister is spending the night when they go to get a flu shot. So they worry about her and you can see their little brains processing some of the extra procedures that she has to do or even the medicines that she takes on a daily basis. But on the one hand, it's just who she is and they don't know any different. But this next round of surgery will be really interesting because she's older. She doesn't remember any of the stuff that happened to her in the NICU, but they are also older too. So it'll definitely be a little bit of a different experience. And we're really aware of that. And we talk to them about that a lot. We talk to therapists about that and how to help them through that. We know it's really important.
Home Tonight Forever by the Baby Blue Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed in the podcast are not those of Hearts Unite the Globe, but of the hosts and guests, and are intended to spark discussion about issues pertaining to congenital heart disease or bereavement.
You are listening to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart with Anna.
In the last segment, we learned about Charlotte and her medical history, and we also learned about your two precious boys. And I know that Charlotte inspired you to write your first children's book. So tell me why you felt it was important to write this book, Katie.
As Charlotte started to get a little bit older, 3, 4 years old, she was in a medically stable place. We were home. She was healthy and thriving. And so I started to think about how all of her health conditions are going to affect her social, emotional well-being, body image, confidence, how she's going to control the narrative around it with peers, teachers, her siblings. And so being a teacher and having 2 older kids, I often use books as a jumping off point to talk about all topics with my niece got glasses. And so we were Googling books about glasses. You know, it's a great way to help kids talk about a new topic. So kind of started putting feelers out for what was out there. And I just couldn't find exactly what I was looking for. And in hindsight, it was very specific what I was looking for. So I started to jot down a few ideas. And honestly, I was just writing it down for Charlotte. I didn't have an intention of doing much with it. And then I showed it to my husband and he was like, "Hey, you should, this is good. You should do something with this." And so I slept on it for a night or 12 and was like, if this could help anyone, if this could help other kids that have had surgery, if this could help peers or siblings talk about any kind of difference, whether it be a medical complexity, a surgical scar, or anything, then why wouldn't I put that out there into the world? So I took a leap and did it, and here we are.
Oh, my goodness. I totally understand, because that's why I wrote my first book as well and put together the second and third four. So there is a need. And I think you're especially qualified as an educator. So tell me how being an educator informed your sense of writing for this book.
I love this question too. I think my teaching background influenced the book a lot more than maybe I even realized while I was writing it. I worked as a learning behavior specialist in a special education classroom when I was teaching, and we used to use something a lot called social stories. And really, it is just a story meant to introduce a social situation, and it helps kids understand how to behave in those situations. So as I'm reflecting about My Scars, My Brave Adventure now, I think it really is a complex social story. It talks about how you share your surgical scars with your friends. When it comes up in a social situation, how do you talk about it with other people? How do you talk about differences? So I think in that sense, the framework was definitely built in my professional background. And then also, I had quite a few literacy principles that were really important to me in terms of writing style. Three in particular is that the book follows a rhyming pattern. It has rich language, and it has a refrain that's repeated throughout the book. And those were all things that I felt really passionate about after having taught reading for several years.
Oh, sure. That makes it so much easier to remember the story, and the children can anticipate what's being said. They can help take part in the story. Even if they're not really reading it, they've heard it enough that they can repeat it back. So I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. I had the luxury of my kids were in that age where we are reading multiple books a day every single night. So I was like, what books are they drawn to? Which books do I enjoy reading to them? Which ones really promote literacy? That was all really important to me as I was working on it.
Oh, I just love it. So what age group is the book written for?
So the book is listed as written for 4 to 8-year-olds. The illustrator was Vanessa Kuiper, and she's extremely talented. She did a wonderful job. And I think the younger age group, those 4 to 5-year-olds, Charlotte's age, are really drawn to the illustration. And at the same time, the older age group, my 8-9-year-old son and his peers, are really drawn to the complexity of the story and kind of understand that bigger concept about differences and how do we talk about these. So it's been interesting to see how it resonates with the different age groups as it has been put out into the world.
Is it the kind of book that a grandparent would buy to read with their children, or a parent?
Yes. We've had a lot of grandparents that have bought the book, and you can read it with your kid. And it's such a great conversation starter, I have found. It's like, do you have scars? What other kind of scars? Differences? And I've had a lot of people tell me that it sparked some good dinner conversation. So it's definitely meant for people to read it to their grandchildren, children, nieces, nephews. But also, I think, because I do see my 9-year-old who's in 3rd grade, will read it to himself, and I'll catch him kind of flipping through it. And So it's been neat, again, to see how it can be used a few different ways.
Sure. And most of us, if we make it to adulthood, we have scars somewhere on our bodies. I broke my arm when I was 7, so I have quite an impressive scar on my elbow. And I actually did talk to my child about his medial scar and showed him my scar, and his dad was a boy, was all boys. Yes. So he's got scars all over as well. Even though he didn't have heart surgery or broken arm surgery like I did. So I think scars, that's definitely something that everybody can relate to. Even if you don't have one, you know somebody else who has one. So I think it's beautiful that you brought this up, as it's not a taboo subject to talk about. You can talk about it very naturally, and then that takes away some of the fear. That's the hope, right?
I think so often as parents, if you're in a grocery store and our kids point out some difference, a wheelchair or anything visible, our kind of knee-jerk reaction sometimes would be like, shh, let's not talk about that. And I think it's so important, as I thought about Charlotte and how it's going to come up, and for her brothers, and they might get asked about it. So how can we talk about this in a healthy way instead of sweep it under the rug, because it's going to come up.
It absolutely is going to come up. How has this brought up conversations in your household? So Charlotte doesn't have a scar yet. She doesn't have a scar for that, but she had a lot of surgery. So does she have a bunch of scars?
She does. She has 6 scars from the different surgeries. Some of them are bigger or more prominent. But yeah, so she does have scars. It is an open heart surgery, so she will have that scar as well. But yeah, my middle son, Lyle, had a mole removed when he was a baby. And so we've talked about that one for him. My oldest son, Henry, has some scars from falling. Like you mentioned your husband, like some of that childhood stuff. I also challenge him because he's older too. Okay, you haven't had surgery. You haven't had a scar, but what maybe makes you different that you need to talk about? And in his mind, he was like, I have braces and I'm the only kid in my class that has braces. And that makes me feel different sometimes.
Well, yeah, he's kind of young to have braces.
Ah, so as an adult, we might be like, well, it's not a big deal. But to him, that is a big deal. So it was actually a great opportunity to say, let's talk about that. Why do you have your braces? Have your friends asked you about your braces? What could you say? Yeah, I have braces because I'm going to fix my teeth. I need more space in my mouth and then they'll come off. So it's been a good starting off point for that. And one of my favorite lines in the book is that we all have scars. Some of them you can see or some of them might be in your head. So I hope that for older kids or in therapeutic settings, that can be a conversation for maybe some traumas that individuals have gone through that you might not have. Correct. Yeah, you might not have this big scar that everybody can see, but maybe there is something that you want to talk about that you think makes you different. So hopefully that message is getting across and resonates.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect or CHD community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, a handbook for parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
As we were talking in the last segment, I thought, wait a minute, are we going to have a book about braces next? Tell me about your writing.
That is such a good question. Yeah, I really would like to write another book. And I think because this first one happened so organically, as I mentioned, I didn't necessarily set out to write a book. I think that I will want the process to be a little bit that way again. I think that it has been set up to be a beautiful series. It could really be my blank, my brave adventure. So my braces, my brave adventure. Because I know, and I know many of your listeners do know too, how much work, and I know you know how much work goes into these books, and it really has to be something that I'm passionate about. So I really hope that there will be another book. I plan for there to be, but I'm not sure what it will be yet. Will it be in the medical realm with some of the things that Charlotte still has ahead of her? Or will I pivot and do something about braces or something more common? I don't know yet.
Well, it's interesting because I have a woman who helps me with sound engineering, and she had a palate that was too small. So she had to have braces when she was young, and she had to have this thing that they put up in a palate to stretch it and to give her more room in her mouth for her teeth to grow properly. And I know she had to deal with that. I think there probably are a lot more people who are having to deal with braces or mouth issues, and everybody sees your mouth.
Yeah.
It's a really hard thing to hide your heart. That's an invisible scar for the most part, unless you're at the beach or you're someplace where your shirt is off. So a lot of people can hide that. But when it comes to your mouth, that is something that's really hard to hide.
I think there are so many things out there like that. Birthmarks, the list could go on and on. But yeah, hopefully this book does that a little bit, even though it's about scars. I really wanted people to be able to take it and reflect. And what's my brave adventure? I might not have scars, but I have something else. So hopefully I can do that in books to follow, but also hopefully I've laid the groundwork for it a little bit in this book. Like we've all been through something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even when you're a young kid, you've taken a tumble off of the monkey bars or flipped off the slide at the water park, or I don't know. There are different kinds of accidents that kids can have where, yeah, they do have to go to the emergency room. When Alex was little, my husband had made hamburgers on the grill. And he was coming inside. I was selling Pampered Chef at the time. And we had this tool called the Barbie Boss, which was great because in addition to being a spatula, on the side, it was serrated so you could cut into meat.
Cool.
And then it also had prongs. Well, Alex was running behind Daddy going, hamburgers, hamburgers, like clapping his hands. And his hand went up and got sliced on the serrated edge of the spatula. So we did not have hamburgers that night. We had a trip to the emergency room, and it was so fun. But yeah, kids have things that happen to them, and he was so brave. He had to get a couple little stitches, but he was very brave, and he watched them doing it. Of course, they had numbed it, and he was very analytical about it, especially considering he was 3 and a half or so. Yeah. He wasn't even 4, but he was very brave about it. And I thought, yeah, these kids are so resilient, but it does help. His daddy was a nurse and he worked in the emergency room. So we were used to going to the emergency room. It wasn't a scary thing because we brought daddy dinner in the emergency room all the time. So he knew the people that were there. That's lucky. It really wasn't a scary experience for him. But he was really disappointed not to get hamburgers that night.
Yes. I hope you had hamburgers the next night.
We did. We did. Absolutely. Yes. I think it's good that you're opening conversations with kids. We need that to take some of the fear away from, we can't protect our children. We don't want to put them in a bubble and not let them experience life. So we have to have the vocabulary to talk to them when things don't go according to plan. None of us want our kids to end up in the emergency room. None of us want our kids to have operations. And we know that there's fallout on the siblings when that happens.
Yeah.
So how do we ameliorate that? It's not easy.
Yeah. No, it really isn't. And as much as this book was for Charlotte and about her scars and owning the conversation around it, I really was intentional about her brothers and the audience of the book and how I really want it to be educational and eye-opening for them as well. Like, wow, this is happening for people out there and it's okay. And we can talk about it. And oh my gosh, people have surgeries and go to the hospital. And I think so much, it's just talked about in such a scary way. And I know I mentioned the illustrator, Vanessa, before, but it was really important to me that when we did a heart x-ray, it wasn't just the cartoon heart that we see on Valentine's Day, but it looked atomically correct, that it looked like
very
a heart
good.
And it was an x-ray. All of those details were really important to me because I think kids can grasp and understand so much.
Oh, so much more than what we give them credit for. Absolutely. Yeah. And kids are growing up faster in some ways because they see so much on TV, on social media. I see little kids in a grocery store with their own tablets while mom and dad are shopping. Who knows what all they're looking at? So, yeah, kids are way more sophisticated today than they were in my day. That's for sure, Katie.
It's difficult to navigate all of it. And my kids are still young enough that I've been able to protect them from a lot of that. But I know it's coming.
It is not easy. Tell me where people can find your book, Katie.
Yeah, so you can find it on my website, which is katygreenauthor.com. So Katie's K-A-T-Y, green, like the color, author.com. And then it's also on Amazon.
Great. And I will have links to Katie's book in the show notes. And remember, friends, the show notes are the description of the show. So just in case you're on your exercise bike, you don't have to stop and get a pencil. I will have it. You can just link straight to it. So that's really great. Yeah. Katie, I can't believe our time is almost up. This has gone by way too fast. Of course, I really relate to so much of what you said. I was a special ed teacher, too. I taught children who were deaf and hard of hearing, and then obviously became a mother myself and had a kid with a heart defect. So we have so many things in common. It's really cool. But before you leave, I would love for you to tell me what advice you would have for parents who also want to write a book for their children.
Yeah, I think that's also such a great question because it can be a very complicated, overwhelming process. And there are so many ways to do it. But one thing in hindsight that I was really happy I did was go with a hybrid publishing model. And it allows you to really control a lot of the creative freedom around the book. I mentioned how important to me the rhyming aspect was. And I talked to a couple of publishers who were like, you really shouldn't do that. It would be much easier to write the story. And I was like, no, this is important to me. So it allowed me to keep some of those aspects. But then I also had the benefit of a professional editor, someone to help me with the typeset. They matched me with an illustrator, the printer, and all of that. So it allows a lot of the creative freedom with the supports of people who do this all the time. So I think especially for my first book, I'm really glad that I went that direction. But I would say do it. Like I mentioned before, it was an unintentional, organic process for me. But I think if it could help people, and if you have an idea and so many people have important stories to share and messages to get out into the world. So I would really encourage you to do it.
I feel the same way. I think everybody has a book inside of them. Don't you, Katie?
I really do. I really do. And the more I think about it, every person is so interesting and has their own brave adventure that they should share because it could help someone. So
absolutely. And you know, for me, I believe that writing is therapy. It has helped me through so much of the trauma that I have experienced in having to hand my baby off to a surgeon. It's a really scary thing. But for me, journaling and putting together books that I knew would be helpful, I've learned over the years that's called post-traumatic growth, which is when you've gone through a trauma. And after that trauma, it has helped you to grow as a person. Yeah. I would not be the person I am today if I had not written the books. And I am an introvert. Most people don't believe that because I have a podcast.
Lovely. Yeah.
But I'm an introvert. I'm much more comfortable sitting at home typing on my little computer than I am speaking in front of big groups. But thanks to Toastmasters, I've been able to get over my fear of public speaking. And I enjoy it so much more now than I used to. What I love about the podcast is this is perfect for an introvert. I get to talk to just one person and we have an intimate conversation. It's so much fun. But writing that book for my kids, I wrote a children's book as well. Mine is called My Brother Needs an Operation because my child was 3 when baby brother was having 2 open heart surgeries within the first year of life. That's a really critical time for a child. They have magical thinking. And I'm sure as much as he asked for and loved his little brother, that there were times that he maybe had uncharitable thoughts and remembered what it was like before he had a baby brother who took his mommy away from him. And I never wanted him to think that he was responsible for what happened. Yeah. So again, I wrote a book because there wasn't one. I was looking for something very specific, couldn't find anything. And it opened doors for us to have conversations. So I totally understand that. Even if I hadn't published it the way that I did, I ended up creating my own publishing company in order to do it.
Amazing.
I think that just having that story with Joey was important enough to do it. So friends, if you want to tell your story, even if you don't want to publish it, because it is a lot of work. Katie and I will tell you, it's a lot of work.
It is. It is.
And it can be expensive. It can be as expensive as you want it to be. Hiring editors and formatters and all that can really drain the bank account. But it doesn't have to. And if you surround yourself with other creative people, you can barter services for each other. And it's amazing what you can do. And it's so much more affordable now than it was 20 some odd years ago when I started.
Well, there's so many options.
Oh, there's so many options.
I did want to mention, this came to mind when you were talking about it being therapeutic. And I think it absolutely is, just to get it down in writing, as you said, and process through some of the things you're thinking about for Charlotte and her brothers and sisters and other kids. But something that has been so rewarding and therapeutic for me in this process is we set up a donation program at the Children's Hospital here in Chicago, which is Lori Children's Hospital. And I work with the child life specialist to donate the book to surgical patients, both in the cardiac unit and the NICU and pediatric surgery. And it has been the best thing to get notes from parents who are like, my daughter brought home your book from the hospital today, and see it out there and helping people that have gone through the same thing. I think that has been the really therapeutic part for me as well. When you're in the hospital, as many of your listeners know, are getting so many things from so many people that are incredibly helpful. And you have this feeling of, how can I ever really say thank you? And this was one very small way that I felt like we could give back a little bit in that community. So that has been incredibly special and very therapeutic for me.
Oh, I just love that. Katie, it has been so delightful getting to know you, my dear. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Oh my gosh, I have loved this. Thank you so much for having me.
It has been so much fun. Friends, I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have. That does conclude this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this program, you might enjoy my new podcast, the CHD Podcast, that I will be co-hosting with Joe Flowers, an adult with CHD. You can find more information at heartsunitetheglobe.org. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have become inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host, Anna Jaworski, can be heard at any time, wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode is released every Tuesday from noon Eastern Time.